It's customary to use a pre-concert talk at these concerts. And for this one, I decided to pick something that's addressed more at the non-musicians in the audience than the musicians. For 30 years almost, I was the director of the United States Coast Guard Band, and I had a lot of friends in the Coast Guard who weren't musicians. And once they got to know me well enough to be able to ask the question without feeling they were running the risk of insulting me, in one form or another, I often got asked the question, what exactly is it that you do up there? And do they really need you to be able to play? And I got asked that often enough and got used to answering it that I decided I'd like to address it here in a pre-concert talk. And I hope I'm not speaking exclusively to an audience of experienced musicians, because if I am, you're really bored silly. Anyway, I want to begin by looking at it sort of in a micro way, talking about what we conductors actually do with our hands and with the baton, which is called a baton, by the way. One of my last concerts with the Coast Guard was reviewed, and I was interested to note that the reviewer referred to it as my wand. And I was thinking it would be nice if it worked, because we could do a lot more performances. If it were really magic, we wouldn't need to rehearse. But anyway, there are three basic categories of things that we're doing with our hands when we're up here conducting. The first one is what you might call housekeeping, just tending to business, showing the beat, which becomes particularly important in difficult passages or passages where the time signatures are mixed or changing, or if there's a transition going on from a fast to a slow tempo or vice versa, and so forth and so on. There are beat patterns that the players are used to seeing in standard music. A lot of music is 4/4 time, 84 beats, and they're used to seeing one come down, two go to their right, my left, three the other way, and four go up. And if it's three beats in a bar, it's 1, 2, 3. If it's five, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You may notice that there's one thing in common. The last beat's always up, the first beat's always down. It's a way, especially in complicated music, of somebody being able to tell at a glance where things are and what's going on. The second general category of things conductors do is give cues when somebody has to come in. Now, inevitably, when I get to that spot talking to Princeton, well, can't they just count and know when they come in? Well, yeah, but let's say you're a trombonist in an orchestra. It's not the least bit uncommon to have to count 65 measures and play three notes and then start counting the next 65 measures. And when you start wondering about measure 51, if you left one out, it's really reassuring when you get to number 66, the one you play, and if the conductor even just glances over and smiles. And that's all a cue is sometimes. Once in a while, it's glancing over and glaring. And it may actually be a cue, a hand cue or a cue for the time. I remember when I first started studying conducting, I was studying the last movement of the New World Symphony, Dvorak. And my teacher said, you know, there's a little symbol zing in there about halfway through. It's well into the movement. And it's the only note that player plays in the whole piece. And I remember my teacher saying, if you want that to be played, you better cue it. If you don't, you got about a 50% shot. And that's very much the case. It's just reassuring to see a cue to make sure you know you're in the right place. And then the third category of things that we do is show things with our hands. And I'd like to demonstrate that with the group. We use our whole bodies and our faces, if we're doing it right, to show what it is we want out of the music. Let me show you an example of light kind of music, something very light. Our hands have to be light, and I'm going to do this facing sideways so you can sort of see what I'm doing. For the one note that they have to play there. But you make your hands reflect what it is you're looking for from the players. If you're looking for accented, heavy music, then you make your hands show that. we do everything we can to be expressive. There are some schools of thought that for a conductor, the group is your instrument that you play. There are other schools of thought that for a conductor, your body is your instrument, and you have to use it to convey the music. We certainly try. Now, the second question people ask is, do they really need you to be able to play? And the answer may surprise you. It is sometimes yes and sometimes no. It depends entirely on the character of the music. Generally speaking, if the beat is unchanging and just chugging along without any need for change, especially a good group like this one has no problems at all. Let me show you just by playing a little bit of the third movement, the march from the whole first suite, which is on this program, and you'll see what I mean. That music just plays right along, and as you can hear, they can play it just beautifully. But let us play for you a passage that has changing tempos. Now, they've rehearsed it, so they know it, and I'm pretty sure this is going to sound good regardless. But if you listen carefully, you're going to hear that it's not quite as together, it's not quite as confident as it would be with a conductor. Became the kiss of death for the famous French composer Louis, who in 1687, in a moment of conducting zeal combined with bad aim, managed to drive the staff through his foot. And he died of the ensuing infection. So we found a better way to do it. But this way, we don't hurt ourselves, sometimes other people. But even through the classic era, which was the last part of the 1700s and the early part of the 1800s, still, by and large, music tended not to do a lot of speeding up and slowing down within sections. We saw those wonderful scenes of Mozart conducting his operas in the movie Salieri, but that was still a newly emerging form. And even at that time, there was the practice of the harpsichord player conducting the singers and the principal violinist or concertmaster conducting the orchestra. And given the egos of today's conductors, I've always wondered how well that worked out. But it was a practice at one time. When the art of conducting came into its own was really in the Romantic era in the early 19th century. And the reason for that is simple. For the first time, music evolved to the point where it started speeding up and slowing down. All kinds of expressiveness, it would even come to a stop. I mean, imagine a bunch of musicians who were used to the classic era, the symphonies of Haydn and Mozart that just clipped along merrily, being faced with pom 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 pom, pom 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 pom. You know, how do you cope with that? And other music like it. It was a complete change, and that's when conductors started coming to their own. First two really famous conductors are generally thought to be Mendelssohn and Wagner. And it's Wagner who's usually credited with turning the conductor's role from merely being a coordinator of activities to being the planner, the one who determined what the interpretations of the music were going to be, and made the conductor a much more powerful figure, which was a good thing in the sense that musical decisions were no longer being made by committee. But it was a bad thing in that he started a proud tradition of autocratic conductors that lasted 150 years, and the worst of them who managed to squeeze all the pleasure out of music making for everybody involved. But it did establish the conductor as a figure who could do good things for the organization. The three main areas that the conductor works in looking at the big picture is, as I said, just tending the business, coordinating what's going on, doing interpretation of the music, and being a leader. We all know what leaders are. They're good ones and bad ones. The good ones are the ones who inspire us to do good things. I want to spend just a couple of minutes before we close on the middle of those three, interpretation, because, again, in speaking with friends, their reaction to that will be, what do you mean interpretation? The conductor writes the notes down, you play, right? Well, yeah. And no. Let's just talk about one aspect of music. How fast is it going to go? In the early days of writing, you'd get a word like allegro, meaning pretty fast. Most of these words come over the Italian language because that's our lexicon. Or adagio, pretty slow. Or maybe molto allegro, very fast. But nothing very specific until about 60 or 70 years ago when composers began adding metronome markings. If we're an allegro, perhaps quarter note equals 116, meaning beats per minute. Well, that's very specific, and that really pins the conductor down, takes away a lot of the excuses. Except that there are three good reasons to maybe not go with what the composer wrote. Number one, a lot of us are writers. I am, and I've had the experience of writing a tempo on a piece of music that made perfectly good sense to me sitting at my dining room table or sitting in front of my computer in more recent years. But when I got it in front of a group, it just didn't sound right. Not because they couldn't play it, it just didn't work with live musicians. Secondly, we've all seen, well, in my generation, people like Copland and Stravinsky conducting their own music at very different tempos than what they had marked on the page, meaning that they had experienced the same thing. And then thirdly, even if it is a tempo on the page that works, if it's not comfortable for a conductor, he or she is never going to be able to be convincing in selling that tempo to their group and therefore to you and the audience. So conductors will change the tempo for that reason. But just think about this. Let me show you something These are tempos that are perfectly reasonable and yet very different. We're going to give you a little bit of Henry Fillmore's wonderful Klaxon and March at a sort of routine march tempo. Perfectly good. Nobody would ever criticize a conductor for taking that tempo. Here's a little bit of it, the tempo we're going to take, which is a bit more like a circus march. Life is the players have to be reading their music most of the time. And it takes a lot of us a long time to figure out that actually most of what they get from us is peripheral. It's not direct line of sight. But most of us still think nobody's paying any attention. And I'm sure that the following story is born out of some frustrated conductor's conviction nobody's looking at it. It seems that a small Midwestern orchestra is getting ready to go on a two-week tour. They get there for the final rehearsal before the tour, and they find the orchestra manager standing on the podium instead of the conductor. "Ladies and gentlemen," she says, "I'm terribly sorry, but the maestro was ill, can't make tonight's rehearsal or begin the tour with us. Does anyone have any conducting experience?" After a moment of silence, the last chair viola player hesitantly puts his hand up and said, "I did a little bit of conducting in college. I guess I could try." So he gets up and does the dress rehearsal, and he's really quite good. The orchestra sounds better than with the regular conductor. And they go out on tour, and things are going great. They're starting to get press coverage they've never had before. All good things come to an end. At the end of the first week, the maestro comes back. So the viola player, instead of getting ready to conduct, gets out his viola and walks out on the stage and sits down on the last stand next to his stand partner, who turns in puzzlement and looks at him and says, "Where the heck have you been all week?" It isn't really like that, but I'm sure it's sometimes fueled that way to some conductors. I want to say, speaking as a conductor, I could not possibly feel more fortunate than to have gotten this job with this group, because they are such a wonderful group. They could not have made me feel more welcome. They have welcomed me not only onto their podium, but into their group, and I'm so pleased with them. And as you listen to this concert today, you're going to find out why. They are a remarkable group of gifted players who just love making great music, and I'm so glad that you can be here with us today to see this. Thank you for listening. We're going to take about a 7 or 8 minute break, and then the concert will begin. Thank you so much.